Today, we're joined by Paige Fultz, campus director of Alpha Brownsville, a school celebrated for its exceptional student outcomes. In the debate over extrinsic versus intrinsic motivation, Paige has crafted a powerful blend of both, transforming how students engage and excel. How does her approach strike the perfect balance to inspire lasting success? Stay tuned as she reveals the secrets behind Alpha Brownsville's motivational magic. Remember, if you're listening to this podcast, be sure to check out our YouTube channel to see Paige and her campus in action. This is Lectures on Learning, Episode 5, Motivating for Mastery in Tomorrow's Schools. Welcome to Lectures on Learning, Paige.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining me today.
Happy to be here.
So tell us a little bit about your school. Where is it?
Absolutely. So Alpha Brownsville, we're down at the very bottom of Texas, right on the border, and near South Padre Island, if you're familiar.
Yeah, so, you can actually see Texas, I mean Mexico,
yes,
from the border, right?
Yeah, you can. Yeah. With Brownsville, I mean, it is a border town, so you can cross right on over.
Are you from Brownsville originally?
I'm not. I grew up in Houston up until 18, and then I moved around. I was out of Texas for about 13 years, came back, and I spent some time at Alpha Austin, and then after 8 months at Alpha Austin, I moved down to Brownsville.
And tell me about your students. How long has the school been around and who's there?
Yeah, so the school started in 2022. I've been there since 2023. So I started in its second year. I was really tasked with going down there to make sure that we could see that the two-hour learning model worked. And we were able to prove it in that first year. Students did learn 2X, which is awesome.
So for people who aren't familiar with the two-hour learning model, your school is an alpha school that's premised on this type of learning model. Can you just briefly describe it?
Yes, absolutely. So the premise is kids learn twice as fast or 2 grades in 1 year and in only 2 hours of the day.
All right, and we're going to get back to that and see if you're approaching those results. But first, just tell me who your students are so we get a feel for your community.
Yeah, so actually, Alpha Brownsville has an extremely diverse student population, which has been probably my favorite aspect of the school. But we have local students from the Brownsville area, those who have, you know, come from families who've been living there for a long time. We have also SpaceX students, so half of the student population are families from SpaceX. So they're basically, one of their parents works as an employee.
Oh, that's right. So Elon Musk's SpaceX facility is quite close to Brownsville.
Yes.
Okay.
Starbase is about a 25-30 minute drive from Brownsville. So you have a lot of families who are coming in from all over the country to work for SpaceX who are now settling into Brownsville.
Okay, so those are, and then tell me about your teachers.
Yeah, so our guides, most of them come from a public education background, mm-hmm. I would say 80% of them, and then some of them come from no education background at all, and actually like having that little bit of a mix presents a really cool dynamic in the school, because we can really benefit from those who come from the public education space. I mean, their grasp on classroom management and just student techniques is fantastic, and then those who don't come from a public education background bring in this really new innovative ideas that when the two marry, it's magic.
So this might be hard for you to say because you don't want to brag on yourself, but why do you think Alpha tapped you to set up their Brownsville campus?
I think that they saw that I was able to turn kids around.
Yeah.
I know that that's one of Alpha's structures for, yeah, like, can you turn an unmotivated kid into a super motivated kid? And they saw that that was actually one of the tasks that I had as soon as I came into being an Alpha guide in Austin. I was tasked with, like, okay, these are a few of our kids who basically, like, if they were given the right levers, they would probably change the whole group. So we need you to change these kids. And then I ended up doing it. And so I think that was why.
Well, I think teachers and parents and governments around the world share that question of if you give students the right motivational structures, can you actually help them achieve?
Right.
So I'm eager to hear what you think about that, because everyone has that question at a time when we feel like we need students who are more able to adapt to the changing world, and yet we don't necessarily have systems in place and a model in place that can create that.
Right.
It's a time when I think a lot of people feel that.
Absolutely. And if you have a really properly motivated kid, all of a sudden that student becomes like almost more than what a teacher could provide in terms of classroom management or motivation. So if you can wield the right students, they end up having a deeper positive effect on every other student.
So they sent you to Brownsville to seek for these results. How's it been? How are the results for you? And granted, you're new. Mm-hmm. It's a relatively new school, but so far, do you feel like you're starting to see results that you're excited about?
Absolutely. So last year, in the 2023 to 2024 school year, our school had an average of 2.3x learning across the student body, which was awesome to see. So by our benchmarks, we did it.
Yeah. So what is that exactly? 2.3x compared to peers in comparable schools.
Correct. So we assess the students through three MAP tests. I need to remember what MAP test stands for. Measure academic growth.
Progress, yeah.
There we go. So the MAP is understanding on a national scale what other students are learning in the public private education space. So we do that three times a year. We do it in the fall when we start. We do a check-in in the winter, and then we do a year-to-year in the spring. So that's how we were able to tell that students learn 2.3 times a grade level in that school year.
So a first grader would have gotten to third grade?
Correct.
Partway through third grade?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, exactly. And then, so this year, for the 24-25 school year, we just took our winter MAP. So we just, this kind of helps us get an assessment, and we are already at 2x learning for our students, which is really cool to see because we're in half of a year. So
given that we do share, really as a society, a question around how on earth do you motivate students to have those kind of results?
Yeah.
Do you believe that motivation is one of the key levers that creates those results? Or would you cite several other things that come ahead of motivation for getting those results?
I think there's a lot of things that pull the levers of motivation. Mm-hmm. So one is culture. Mm-hmm. Campus culture is going to have a huge effect because a lot of times I wake up, I have motivation for 65 seconds, yeah. And then I don't. And I have no idea why. But if I'm in a certain space or a certain environment that is catering to my discipline, yeah. my you know, community's interests, then I'm going to go through with what needs to be done, regardless of if I'm motivated or if I'm not.
Yeah.
So I think that's also a really tricky one, is like motivation can be very fickle. So what are the levers that sort of support when motivation is just not there?
Yeah. I think everyone's experienced that, though. I know I was just lifting weights with my teenage son, and I was amazed by how much just my pride caused me to completely lift more than I would have if I didn't have him next to me that I didn't want to, totally. That I wanted to impress. And so you are right that your environment very much affects your motivation. So as we think about motivation, there's two schools of thought. On one hand, people say it's really about intrinsic motivation. It's about finding meaning in the work itself so that a student feels curious or that it resonates with one of their personal interests. And so they're motivated to pursue it because they purely want to know more about the topic or the adventure that we've called them on. Another school of thought says the faster way to go is with extrinsic rewards, extrinsic motivators that help reward students in real time as they are making progress. So if you were to just say on a scale of 1 to 10, which of those you think has been more instrumental in getting the results that you've seen at Alpha Brownsville, 1 would be intrinsic motivators, 10 would be extrinsic motivators, what would you say?
I have to say you have to have levers of both. I wouldn't say it's equal. I do think that intrinsic motivators are going to be your more sustaining, more valuable. They're going to pull students through some of the harder, more rigorous activities or challenges that they have. However, extrinsic are great for the days when, you know, when students are younger, they haven't quite decided what it is they're passionate about or care about. They haven't developed their values, their personal values quite yet. But then also even for the older students on certain days where, you know, seeing far ahead in the future is just not playing a role, then tapping into an extrinsic motivator will always, it's going to do its job. I think one of the things that's important about extrinsic motivators is making sure that they are natural to the cause. And what I mean by that is that they're not arbitrary. Mm-hmm. So if you can sort of tie an extrinsic to having a either a natural consequence or a natural reward that makes sense to the student, then it's less gimmicky. It's not something that they can just throw away. Intrinsic motivators, though, by far is going to be what helps students stay motivated for on a longer term.
Okay, so you're exactly a five. You're not even a four or a six.
I'm exactly a five.
Right down the middle, you're trying to get the perfect blend of both of them.
Yes.
So for intrinsic motivators, what I've read in the research is just that they tend to lead towards that long-term commitment, like you said. And so I'm wondering if you can think of an example of that. Is there a time in your classrooms in Brownsville where you've really designed with curiosity or personal interest or something like that at the heart of it so that you're trying to optimize for that long-term deep engagement and inquiry into the subject?
Absolutely. For instance, with our fifth and sixth graders right now, we're doing, it's a passion workshop where they are basically leading through what their interests are. They're doing different things each week, whether it's 3D printing or learning about fitness activities or learning through coaching methods. And then they're actually rating themselves on how engaged were they, how curious were they with the content, what did they like most about it, what didn't they like about it. And then they're going through that their own feedback to sort of see, oh yeah, I am interested in this, oh I'm not. And then at the end of the workshop, we basically compile a profile of each student and show them, hey, this is what you took most interest in and why. And so our point with this is that down the road, through their school year, we can tap into, you know, this student absolutely loved doing analytical work with 3D printing and, you know, analyzing stuff. So we're going to bake that into more of their projects, more of their programs, more of their academics. Or a student who maybe they took to the coaching aspect or the mentorship aspect. So how many things can we put into their school day where we're leveraging them as a mentor to the preschool students or to other students in their classroom?
Yeah, I feel like about 10 years ago or so, that idea of like individual learner profiles really came online. The idea of dive into the individual interests and passions and desires and heartaches and everything of your students so that then you can design work that's more relevant to them and interesting to them. And although I'm not sure I hear that term as much today, the concept still remains of trying to understand your learner so then you can design activities and projects that resonate with them.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's the really difficult part is actually pulling it from the student. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the times you can sit down and ask them like, hey, what are you interested in?
Yeah.
They're like, I'm interested in dinosaurs and I'm interested in going outside, playing outside, but they haven't really had the time to think through delicately, like, you know, what am I really interested in? So if you can bake that into your program for an entire year, you start asking them those questions at the beginning of the year, you continue to ask them throughout the year, and by the end, you have them reflecting on, you know what, I'm not so much into dinosaurs anymore, and in fact, I'm into XYZ.
Well, I wonder though, do you even think it might be more effective to present a variety of projects and see what interests them? I'm just imagining that many students wouldn't even know what they're interested
in.
So if they don't have the exposure to it, how would they know?
Yep.
But there's more risk in that because you haven't tested yet. You don't know if it'll hit.
Right.
But I would also think, like, if you only ask students what you're interested in, you're getting a lot of, like, Minecraft, Fortnite.
Yeah,
you're not really going to get, like, you're not going to really, they don't know yet that they actually think that, like, that rocket ships are really fascinating until they've actually tried a project around rocket ships.
Well, and this is why we always bake in surveys to any of the workshops, projects, things that they're doing. We're asking them all the time for their feedback of, like, what did you or did not like about that?
Yeah.
And if we're able to record it and kind of spit it back to them in ways that they're like, oh, I didn't even realize that I enjoyed that so much.
Yeah.
Okay, that's giving me perspective on what I'm interested in.
Well, what are the features of your learning design that's really conducive to tapping into those personal interests is that you have the long blocks of time in the afternoon for projects and workshops. So in other schools that might have a more conventional model where they're in a sit and get classroom all day long, there's not time for that deep inquiry in the afternoon like you have after the students are done with their 2 hours. And so that strikes me as an opportunity. Can you think of a project or a workshop that has been in the afternoon, either here or in the other schools you've guided, that has been especially resonant, where you're like, wow, I just saw students really diving in. They authentically seemed personally interested without my having to dangle any carrots in front of them.
Not to bring up the metaphor, but diving in, I have to say the Beyond the Blue swimming workshop where we taught the fifth and sixth graders how to teach preschool students to swim independently, I've never seen more engagement from a project, truly, just because I think you have these students, well, first of all, they get to go to the pool, right? They get to interact with younger students, but then they're also seeing their own impact in someone else, you know, within 30 minutes.
Yeah.
It's giving them some immediate gratification while also getting to, you know, be an adult, be someone who's looked up to, and instill in someone else a really valuable life skill. So it's not just them having their, like, obviously they're learning such a valuable life skill themselves, but they're getting to install it in someone else.
Well, one of the clever things you did with that particular project was because your high school and some of your middle school, right, is co-located at a...
Yeah,
museum. It's like in a museum where there is a pool. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of a civic...
It's a public space.
So there's that community pool, and so they were able to use that.
Yeah.
And so that's so smart because when you look at what... features, what amenities are in your community, you might be able to find something that could then engender a great project design that, that taps into innate motivation.
Absolutely. And mm-hmm. I mean, what we've seen with most of our students, when they're able to earn something that gives back, they're way more willing to take that extra step to go through the challenges. So, for instance, when we were doing around the holidays, we were doing incentives for, you know, earning their masteries and really pushing the boundaries. And for every mastery that or lesson that they earned, they would then be able to donate a can to the homeless shelter.
Yeah.
And we physically took the kids over to the homeless shelter, and they delivered their cans that they bought at the market that day. And you heard kids saying, like, oh, I wish I had gotten more masteries. I could have given more cans today. And so I think when you're able to make that immediate impact that they can see that's tied to their learning, that's when it has a really...
So, I mean, I wonder if there's research around this, because my brother, Matt Clayton, who runs Slope School in Provo, Utah, he just opened a second campus that's co-located at a Jewish synagogue, mm-hmm. and so they use that space on the weekdays, and when his students are done with their morning core skills work, then they get to choose from a variety of different options for what to do with their time, and he said by far, the majority choose to go serve at the lower elementary,
wow.
like with the preschool students.
Yeah.
So I wonder if there's research that proves that children innately are drawn to doing something meaningful like that.
Yeah, and being able to see the impact of what they're doing, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I think that's also just in general when kids have a feedback, like when they're seeing, yeah. I've done this and I now get this input back,
uh-huh.
that strikes a huge learning curve.
Yeah.
Whereas I think adults, we can kind of see further into the future of our future selves, so we're not as needy for the immediate impact. But children absolutely need to see.
I mean, that almost bridges, because one of the advantages of extrinsic motivators is that they tend to be more immediate.
Yes.
Like, you did this, here's your piece of candy, whatever it is.
Right.
And so I love what you're saying, that perhaps when Matt's older elementary school students go serve the students in the lower elementary, and they immediately see those children happy to see them and lighting
yeah.
up. It's like when you come home and your puppy dog like celebrates
totally.
That you got home. Like, that's, it's almost feels good.
It's extrinsic, but it's an
yeah.
extrinsic one that we all value as a community as being intrinsic.
Isn't
so
that interesting? It's like
kind of both.
Let's turn our attention now then to the extrinsic motivators, the points, the grades, the badges that give more immediate feedback to students and sometimes seem to work really well, particularly if you don't want to wait and see if the intrinsic motivator is going to manifest, mm-hmm. and if you want to shape routine tasks. So how do you think about using extrinsic motivators at Alpha Brownsville?
Yeah, to your point of using extrinsic motivators, how it's quicker and it can kind of have a faster impact on routine. One that we've implemented the year that I started was raffle tickets. So every week we pull a raffle, and students earn raffle tickets through exhibiting the correct behaviors, through achieving their masteries or earned lessons, but basically anything that we want to see in the school that pertains to upholding the standard, whether academic or behavioral, then they earn a raffle ticket for. And so this actually allows us to, whenever we have any incentive, it's like, okay, we're going to name that 5 raffle tickets, 10 raffle tickets, or a single raffle ticket.
And do the guides educate that, or do the peers give them out?
It's a blend of both, actually.
Okay.
Our older peers, if they have been deemed if they have gone through the process of being able to
raffle ticket certification.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Then they are able to give out raffle tickets. But for the most part, I'd say 75% of it is guides.
And is it quite fair? Is there sometimes I hear from my own children of like, oh, Miss So and So didn't acknowledge that I
right. Yeah, I mean, so it's pretty much quantitative. So we have an action plan that the students review every Monday, which shows, you know, all the lessons that they completed, what have they done in their academic work, and then also what have they done through, we use Class Dojo for behavioral points, which is up in their system, like they add their own points and are corroborated by their student body. So these points that they're reviewing on a Monday morning is how they're earning their raffles. So they're kind of cross-checking, and it's like receipts, basically.
So tell me about Class Dojo. What do you like about that? And what are the drawbacks of that platform?
So we love it because we can pull the lever of, okay, we want to work on perseverance, or we want to work on independence. Then we have an independence point. And a student who is able to navigate through a lesson on their own, or you can tell that they really want to go find support elsewhere, it's like, okay, they can vie for themselves and say, I'm giving myself an independent point. We noticed that, like, it's a public piece to the classroom, so it's up at the front of the wall, and the kids have to, if they go
you
up...
You project it.
Correct, okay. Yes. So anytime something's
like all day
added,
long, it's...
All day long.
The dashboard for Class Dojo is projected
correct.
In the front of the wall in the school.
In each classroom.
Oh, in each classroom.
So each
okay.
class has their own Class Dojo.
Okay.
And then, so if a student believes that they've persevered or they've upheld a standard, then they go up and they add a point. And that usually makes a sound. So everyone kind of looks. They can also dock points from themselves. So it makes another sound. And so it's a public forum. They're not going to go up there and give themselves something that the rest of their community disagrees with, and they're very vocal about it too. So
they'll dispute if they think
yes,
that they've
absolutely. And the guides are there to, you know, obviously manage the scene. And if the guide thinks that, you know, I don't know that that's actually the point you should be giving yourselves, they bring it to the attention of the class. But we love Class Dojo.
Okay, so there's an appeals process, and
yes.
then does that lead to a vote or just
yeah?
Discussion?
Usually it'll be a quick vote, and then it decides if the point stays or goes.
Education is changing. And you can lead the way. The Guide School Kickoff Course trains teachers to become AI-powered guides in flexible, student-led classrooms. Empower your students and transform your role. Start now at guide.school/kickoff. See you there.
But most of the time, I'd say about 75% of the time, maybe 85% of the time, the votes or the points that kids add themselves are good to go. No one has a problem with it. So.
And then I know another system you have is the Alpha Bucks. That you track in the class.
Alphas, yes.
Alphas.
Yes.
Okay, so tell me about alphas.
Yes, so we have an entire economic system. But basically, students earn alphas for the work that they achieve academically, and then also for their Class Dojo points.
Okay.
So we're trying to marry the behaviors and trying to get them to connect, like, when I have these behaviors, I can do this in my academic learning. If I'm persevering, if I'm finding support, if I'm being independent, if I'm staying on task, then I'm able to achieve my academics, and they're able to earn. We have one alpha is worth 25 cents to the dollar. So there's actually a conversion rate. And then.
So can they liquidate their alphas for actual cash?
They can. It's
okay.
A 50% penalty to pull out of the economy. Otherwise.
Has it happened before?
We haven't had anyone
Not
pull out,
yet.
Actually. but we do also, we offer to match it if they want to donate it. So we're trying to really inspire, you know, the idea
Some
of donation
mm-hmm.
versus pulling out cash. And we want to keep the alphas within the internal economy. But yeah, they're able to buy from an internal, we call it the mercado, which is, yeah, their market. But they're able to buy, you know, little toys and things, but also experiences. They can buy lunch with their guide, or they can buy a day to wear silly costumes, they can buy access to our Limitless Lounge. That's another extrinsic motivator that we push a lot is status. Students love status. If they are able to, you know, I have access to this space because I've earned it. The alphas allow you to buy access, but other students actually earn the opportunity to have
that. So tell
status.
Me more about this Limitless Lounge. What is
yes.
this?
Yes. So the lounge is, it's kind of in the center of our school, so everyone can see it. It's a space to go do your work when we've recognized you can take those boundaries down. You can go work in this space that has kind of nicer furniture. It's more of a coffee house vibe. There's usually drinks or snacks available that students manage. And it just has this elevated sense. You don't have to be in the classroom with the guide and with the other students. You can be in this lounge doing your work a little bit more autonomously.
That's fun. So what are some of the fun things they can do in the lounge?
So they have access to like different video games, puzzles, different books. They also sometimes will have like short Pixar film features that we'll have in the lounge, VR headsets. They have like some really cool tech opportunities during their break.
They love that.
Yes.
They love
that.
Okay, another thing I noticed at your school was the student trackers. So they get a Pomodoro done in math or reading or language. Correct?
Yes.
And then they get to mark off on their tracker.
Yes. So visibility, learning visibility is huge. That's what we've come to understand. So if a student is constantly tracking, like, I have achieved this or I still need this to go, and it helps them to go, that's their opportunity to go up to their guide and say, hey, this is what I've accomplished during my 30 minutes, or also being able to speak to, this is how much I still need to work through, this is how much I didn't accomplish.
And this is a paper tracker. And that's the interesting thing, because so many schools have said to me, can we just create a digital Google Doc or something as the tracker? And I don't know if there's specific research that has A/B tested this, but I can say from observation that I've had so many teachers tell me that there's something special about having a paper tracker.
Totally. Yeah.
Why is that?
It's kind of the same way, like, do you take notes often?
Yeah.
Sometimes I need to just like write something down in order for it to solidify in my brain. I think that's a some sort of learning science. Like when you write something down, then you're more likely to either remember it or make it have an impact. And I think too, with the trackers, what's so fun about it, we can design it to be, you know, of interest to the learner. So if we want to put Hello Kitty on there, or if they really like bunnies, then we'll do that, and they can take it home.
Yeah.
And it's something, it's out of, if they're working on their screen, it's a visual that's right next to them, and it kind of presents that opportunity of like, I'm pulling this out to do it here. And it also creates transparency of like, this is the work that I've done or the work that I still need to do. And then there's no confusion. Because I think a lot of kids can kind of fall into that, I don't know what I need to do.
Yeah, where am I? What's next?
I don't know. And you know, mom asks like, how was your day today? Like, I don't know. They can ask, show me your tracker.
Mm.
Or students can be forthcoming with it. Like, this is what I did today.
Mm-hmm.
Let me speak to it.
It's so satisfying too, to like cross. I'm one of those people that writes it down just to cross it off, even if I've already done it.
Absolutely.
So that's probably partly what it's.
And one of the really cool, like we find with our younger levels, so with the kindergartners, they need to move their bodies, right? But they're doing work. So this gives them a really good opportunity. They have to, with their tracker, they're marking it down. And whenever they complete a lesson, they need to go get a stamp. Mm-hmm. So they go up to the stamping station. Everyone else sees, oh, so-and-so went and got a stamp. They're already, okay, maybe that I should get up there and do it, right? And then that gets them to move their bodies a little bit. And then they come back and they get resettled and they keep going. So there's a lot of really nice techniques in there where they're able to move. There's visibility to the classroom of who's achieving what.
So I'm interested, though, in your anomaly. So are there some students for whom these extrinsic motivators just either resonate too much, they're kind of sociopathic about it, and then also conversely, are there anywhere, gosh, you could, like, dangle $1 million bill in front of their faces and they just don't care?
Yeah. I mean, we do get that question from some parents, you know, of our younger ages. They're like, okay, my kids love stuffies, like almost too much, like, or they're just so interested in getting slime, but they're not making the connection that it's because they're learning through science. But we say, give it a little more time.
Yeah.
You know, our older students, they're not so interested in slime and so interested in stuffies. So I would say the younger ages, you do see a little bit more of those anomalies. But then on the other hand, I honestly don't think that there's a lot, like, we don't have any kids where you're like, I just don't know what motivates them. Because there's always something you can find. It's just like, it's up to the guide to build that rapport and do the deep dive to figure out exactly what it is. It might not be the same as what the other kids care about at all, and you might have to deviate, but there's always something you can find.
What you were saying about stuffies resonates. Our daughter was in a school that allowed for the self-paced core skills in the morning, and there was one point where she was so enticed by getting the little diamonds and nuggets or whatever the rewards were on Dreambox Learning. And she made math progress. It was tokens of some coins. I don't remember what it was. But she loved it so much that she would want to work through recess and lunch and just do Dreambox math. All. And so we went to her guide and we said, what do you think? Is this too much? We're concerned to have a little girl doing 6 hours of Dreambox a day. And the guide said, I know, and I'm watching it really carefully, but I'm inclined to say just let it ride for us a little while. Mm-hmm. And so we let her continue to earn her tokens and just stay on the program until she had exhausted it. And she is, to this day, just a brilliant mathematician.
Amazing.
And it was so fun to see her be able to, it was the extrinsic motivators that were getting her there, but I think it was intrinsic too.
Yeah.
There was something about the actual math that was like pleasing her brain.
Yes.
And so it was that combination approach. But so there's that risk. And then how about those who really don't seem motivated by extrinsic? Have you run into any students like that?
We do have some students that are, you know, they need a different lever because maybe what's more important to them is status or a value, right? So having the guides spend time to and also build rapport. I think a lot of the times, like when a guide is able to build rapport with a student, then they're more likely to expel what is going to motivate them. So yeah, we've had some students, I've personally worked with students who it doesn't matter. And a lot of times you'll hear them say too, like, I don't care about making money, or I don't care about making alphas, or I don't care about that, which is really just a defense mechanism of like, what I hear is like, I don't want to fail, or I don't want to make a mistake. And so what you have to pull in that sense, instead of something intrinsic, is more on finding out what is one of their values. So do they care about status? Do they care about, obviously they want to not fail, so you kind of have to tackle it with getting them to be a little more adventurous and getting them to understand it's okay, we make mistakes, it's not a big deal. But I think for those who are less interested in the extrinsic, that's where it really opens the door for finding something intrinsic sooner than later.
That's interesting. I mean, I would be curious to explore too if there's something related to Maslow's hierarchy of needs that's going on there. So modern cognitive scientists have debunked some of Maslow's theory that and his misapplied theory that states that humans tend to be motivated to solve for like physiological needs before they're motivated to solve for safety needs and then social needs and so until they reach their highest self needs. And the modern theorists say, well, that's not necessarily true because even people like in concentration camps who were not getting any of their physiological or safety needs met were still sometimes motivated to manifest their highest self,
right?
Like be a Viktor Frankl. Yeah. And so you see that happening. But I still wonder, if I were a guide and I saw a student who didn't seem to be motivated at all by the extrinsic factors, would you want to at least check and say, well, is there something going on for them where they're just solving right now for basic safety? They don't feel comfortable at the school, or something's going on at home or something such that they just won't play the game.
Right. Yeah, no, that's really interesting insight, actually. And I mean, it could be even something else that's going on at home where, to the point, maybe they get whatever they want at home. And so reaching out, like responding at school is like, oh, well.
Satisfied. I do not need that anymore.
I don't need this.
That's
like,
hard.
This doesn't suit me right here, right now. But I do find it's usually students avoiding or circumventing this concept or feeling of failure. And it's said with, I don't care about that. But really they're just trying to hide that feeling of like, I didn't reach the thing that I thought I wanted. And so it's actually finding ways to not motivate them around the failure, but teaching them through the learning process. Like, okay, you're here, you wanna just know the thing. You know, you might not even care about the extrinsic value that brings you, or the extrinsic motivator that brings you to the thing. But look, you're right here in between. If you're having difficulty or you haven't done it yet, you're right here in the learning process. So I would say most of the time with the guides, when we find someone who, or we find a student who is not responding to an extrinsic motivator of the community, then it is finding a way to get them to understand, okay, you're part of the learning process. And so then we can actually even pull intrinsic levers quicker for those types of students.
So can you make that really concrete? So say a teacher was in that scenario, what are the steps?
We have one student right now, he's 5 years old, and he is giving our preschool guide a run for her money. He is not interested in any of the extrinsic rewards that we are offering. We've changed his tracker. We've had it adapt to what his interests are, which are, he really likes mushrooms, so we created a little tracker with
mushrooms.
Yes.
Oh, that's such a cute thing to love.
And the only thing
magic mushrooms.
No,
just like the little normal mushrooms.
It's like a little mushy character.
Yeah.
I think he calls it mushy.
Oh.
And even we have his stuffy mushy sits in his backpack, and we'll look at him during core skills to see that he's performing well. And we've tried a bunch of different things. Sometimes they work for one set of Pomodoro method, and then they don't work anymore. So this is a perfect example of, you know, what do we do? We go through sort of the Rolodex of, like, what are the things that we've known to work in the past,
uh-huh.
and then we evaluate.
So what are some things? What would you try in the Rolodex?
So one was to adjust the tracker, make the tracker personalized. One was to bring a focus friend, which is Mushy. So Mushy gets to come in his backpack, and if this student is able to achieve their learning, then Mushy gets to come out of the backpack or gets to come sit on the table and come be a focus friend. We noticed that this student really liked to do, like, visuals when he would get a learning. So he would go, crank, crank, is what he was doing.
Yes.
So
that would work for me, for sure.
So then we would just have the students, we would say, like, okay, when this student gets their learning and they want to do the dance move.
The crank, crank.
He gets to lead the dance move.
Yes.
Exactly.
Oh,
and that one has worked.
Yes.
But again, we still find ourselves, we'll come back sometimes to day one. We haven't reached that consistency point yet. So.
Okay, so everyone needs your Rolodex.
Yeah.
That's a good pages Rolodex of motivators. What do you think about food motivators? Kind of controversial.
Okay, so we did this last year.
Mm.
We had, like, we did snacks.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were like, why did we do snacks?
Yeah, I mean, let's just lay out the argument, right?
Yeah.
So some people say there is nothing that a typical young adolescent wants more
mm-hmm.
than food. And if that's what they really want,
why not?
And it's good for them to learn and they do need to eat, then marry the two.
Right.
Other people say there's just something disturbing about, like, dangling a hamburger in front of someone and saying, do this, is very Pavlovian seeming, and maybe is it almost denigrating?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, when we did the snacks, we started to notice a really significant decrease in intrinsic motivators.
Oh.
It was a lot of,
and there is research behind that.
Yeah, so mm-hmm. it was a lot of, like, well, why would I do that? What am I getting? Because there was this tangible, tasty, thing that they had, and the guide started to notice it. We probably did this incentive for about a month and a half, and then we pulled back,
mm-hmm.
and we were like, okay, we can't do that anymore. One thing, actually, that I got from Matt was having students be able to be part of, so eating is part of it, but it's not just like, here's a pancake, or here's a burger, or here's a Doritos bag. It's like,
pancakes would definitely work for my children.
Well, so yes. This is the idea that we got from Matt, was that they get to make their own pancakes.
Mm.
So the part that we really like is that they're still using independence, they're still using their time and space to make their own food. So the only time that we do dangle food as an option is if they're making it themselves.
Mm.
That's where we're okay. We can draw that line.
Mm-hmm. That's a compromise. That's a compromise.
Yeah.
And so speaking of, just to wrap this conversation up, what is that middle? What is the five? So how do we move towards a world where we're blending the extrinsic and the intrinsic together? Do you think you sequence it? Do you start with the extrinsic and then sequence it into the intrinsic? And tell me a story about how this is done in Brownsville.
I think you sequence it. You start. Mm. You're going to start with extrinsic motivators until you start to learn the student.
Do you think you'll phase out raffle tickets eventually? Will you phase out the Limitless Lounge, or are these here to stay?
They're here to stay because mm-hmm. they do, to your point, they're fast and they set up the culture. So they set up the routine of the space, and it's something that everyone can rather norm on and understand, like, okay, these are how we uphold standards and this is how we get rewarded as a community. But I think you start with the extrinsic and then you sequence in intrinsic, and as long as you're putting in front of those students and you're starting to learn from the students what they care about and what's important to them, then you sequence in more intrinsic values. And then once they get to the older ages, a lot of our older students don't care about the Limitless Lounge. They don't care about the raffles. Like, they see the importance of it because it's part of the culture of their school, but they're not as engaged with it.
Paige Fultz, this has been an amazing conversation. And I imagine that everyone who hears that you're getting 2.3 times learning compared to the control group is salivating for similar results. The caveat, of course, is that the learning design has to allow for that kind of self-paced progression and that kind of deep inquiry.
Yeah.
But if those pieces are in place, then the other part of the equation certainly seems to deal a lot with human motivation and the things of the heart, and you seem to be a master of those. So thank you so much for sharing your expertise as a boots on the ground practitioner to give us just that, some things to hold up as a standard, because it's very inspiring to see how creative you've been about designing. It's a new world to figure this out. So thank you.
No, thank you. It's been a pleasure. I always love having these conversations.
There's a great freebie that goes along with this episode. It's called A Page from Paige's Playbook, and it describes the intrinsic and extrinsic motivators that Paige likes best. Check it out at guide.school/5. That's 5 for the episode 5.
Education is changing, and you can lead the way. The Guide School Kickoff Course trains teachers to become AI-powered guides in flexible, student-led classrooms. Empower your students and transform your role. Start now at guide.school/kickoff. See you there.